So that was awesome, because he did do some of my work for me, so thank you very much. But it shows, and we didn't at all confer about this at all, and I mean we didn't, that's not a joke. So that it's good to see some great hooks in there from what I'm about to say. Just a way of introduction, so Neil Verrill, I'm Chief in Behavioural Science in DSTL, so 27 years and going some now, from when it was DERA back in the day. I'm not a wargamer, as many of you know. This is my third connection. So 2019 paper was on how we can bring psychology more into wargaming. Last year was how we think about military deception and wargaming. And then asked this year to reduce a little paper that I wrote in my Army Reserve role to look at how Russians do a bit of wargaming. So not a Russian linguist, although I'm currently doing a Russian sort of PhD. But anybody knows anything about Russian, it's a very difficult language. I heard an American say, or they said to an American, "Oh, you're a Russian speaker, a Russian writer. You're obviously a really good Russian sort of linguist." And he said, "Yeah. The first 10 years are the hardest. And you know, 5 years into mine, I can absolutely agree with that completely. I've known linguists give up on Russian, and this is people who love languages. Just go, no, Russian is too difficult. So if you're a Russian linguist in here." I'm not stealing your eggs or anything like that, and I certainly take my hat off to you because it's a difficult language. So not a Russian linguist, not a wargamer, but I do some Russian-facing stuff in my DSTL role and my Army Reserve role. So I have a bit of history looking at basically Russian military publications and learning how they think and write in their sort of military intelligentsia. So my source material was predominantly from East View. Just a quick show of hands, anybody who knows what East View is and have used it? Okay, so one, wow, okay. So it's a US sort of sponsored thing that's been going on for decades. It has basically, as it says, East View, so it collects basically from the 90s, early 90s, Russian and Chinese publications, both military and non-military, civilian. Some of it gets translated, the vast majority is in the original language, so you've got to have a bit of language skills or be really trustworthy of Google Translate and use some of that stuff. So part of my job is looking at the East View, and this is the source material for this, so the East View Russian military publications. There's like 91 publications since 1990s, 51 of them are active, so that's 51 active Russian military academic journals, military newspapers, magazines that they publish on a monthly or quarterly basis. That is a lot of material, okay? And it's an absolute treasure trove of insights into what Russian military think about and write about. And the vast majority, again, if I asked the same question in a suite of military people, I'd probably only get one hand up again, and it'd probably be David's again. So we're really not taking advantage of looking at this material. I don't know as academics whether you get access to that, but I'd definitely be asking my university and seeing how you can get access to it. Like I say, this will be published, the citation is there, so this is official open source stuff, and I'll try and keep at that level. So a very, very brief history, and this is literally, as a 15-minute presentation, like I say, this is not PhD level knowledge coming here, this is dipping your toe into the water for things to think about and hooks about this for later in the future. So very, very brief history about how this came across. So understanding military sort of reforms in the Russian system. You had Peter the Great, so they all look at and say, fantastic, that's why he's Peter the Great. Look at what he did societally. Look at what he did with the military. And also Catherine II, Catherine the Great, and her big reforms, which you could argue were actually intellectually in the military were even better. You know, and she was, and that's a great one for the Derby House principles, and about diversity and about, you know, empowering women, about how much she absolutely was at the forefront of driving intellectual thought in the military forward. And that's really where you start seeing Russian military dictionaries and things like that starting to be written. So there's a great history in there. Like I say, Peter the Great, if you know anything about him, the Rest is History podcast had a series on him. And very, very clear in there about how much he liked military exercises. You know, you could tentatively say that he was, you know, in that wargaming mindset and that he did things like that as well. So again, there's a bit of a history that's sort of lost in Western history. There's a lot of stuff that's happened in Russian history that really we didn't really know about. you know, the first idea to do machine translation in sort of linguistics was actually a Russian in the 1800s, but that never made it into Western. It was never turned into English language, never put into to the Western bit, so sort of lost the history. And that's one of the things that really annoys Russians. They're very proud of their history, their intellectual history, their science history. I just say, you just don't understand any of this in the West. So it's all sort of out there hiding in plain sight. Notable pushes in the mid-1800s, like I say, and then in the early 1900s, just in time for World War I. And again, those early 1900s, across the board in Russian military, they set up the first camouflage centre in 1904. The French and the Germans didn't do that until 1915, 1916. So again, with war gaming and things like that, you know, you can see that they have this intellectual intelligentsia driving this stuff forward in history that we sort of forgot about. During the Cold War, the Soviet Military Thought series, that's another really good series, all online, all free, Google Books or whatever it is, I can't remember where I found them, but I found the entire series of them from 70 to 90. I've got some of the citations here, but these are books, Russian military thought books, that were translated by the Americans and the Canadians. They were obviously at the time only there for the military to use. They're now online for anybody to use. And you can download those each of those little booklets in Google, so find that. So, types of war games. So Russians do have this term, Voyenya Igra, you know, Igra game, Voyenya, war. Not war game in one word, war game is how you'll see this written. But when you sort of look through East View, you know, you can see this permeated everywhere. I try to look for specific topics in the title, okay? Because if you're looking at it in the title, you know they want to talk about it. You know, that sounds like a very obvious thing to say, but actually when you suddenly get up, you know, you might get five hits, you might get 5,000. But if you're just like, yeah, I'm just looking for the word war game anywhere in the text, you're going to have too much data. So you need to, you know, really focus. If it's in the title, they're thinking about it, they want to write about it, that's the thing I need to start reading. They have this other term, command staff war game. I'll just keep it English. I won't be going into the Russian, mainly because I'll probably butcher some of it. They have exploratory command staff game as well, and strategic command staff war game. So they do have these sort of four terms, but classically being Russian, they'll dip in and out, be consistent and inconsistent with the way that they talk about this. But I think what we're really thinking about here is possibly just war game or command staff war game. And command staff war game is the safe bet for looking at what they're thinking and writing about now. That seems to be the dominant term that I see in a lot of their writing. As Stephen actually said, you know, you've got to be careful, and this is where a bit of language skills help you. Military exercise, command staff exercise, but you've got to be quite careful there. They're talking really more about exercises, as Stephen showed, rather than war games, how we would understand and expect that. And then they always have this term about military games, but actually that's generally about, you know, sports and other activities and things like that. So the word game can throw you off, and the word military and war can throw you off. So you have to have a little bit of understanding of the language. You've got to really delve into your articles. When I was writing the paper, I was like, brilliant, there's loads of stuff. And as you know, interrogate it a bit more, you're like, no, that's about that. No, that's about something else. And then your selection sample starts reducing and reducing. So again, you know, attention to detail. Certainly when you're operating in another language, in another culture, it's always good to have someone that you can rely on that can sanity check your work and your assumptions. Otherwise, we fall into all the heuristics and biases that we know humans can fall into. There's the definition, the current online Russian Federation Ministry of Defense definition of what a war game and command staff war game is. When you look at it and go, oh, I'm looking up for war game, it says, go and see command staff war game. So this is the generic the way that they write this and define this. And then I've just put in there, in bold, the key standout points. And again, great hooks from Stephen's presentation. They're talking about operational training, operational level activity, as well as operations focused stuff. Officer skills, very important, as Stephen said. The Russian military are command led, okay? They don't have that sort of cadre that we have in the West of non-commissioned officers who are professionally trained, professionally qualified, trusted, and empowered to do things. It is a command-led, and you will follow and do what I say. So the, you know, so the ability of commanders, as Stephen again indicated, is it's a great opportunity to be a hero, but you do not want to muck up and be a zero, because we all know what happens in that system. Russian military love maths. There's a great online paper looking at Russian maths. Anybody that knows about mathematics in Russian culture, they reckon they're about each for high school students and about 2 years advanced for the same year. Great quote I heard from a retired American general was, "No Russian officer is maths phobic." Okay, they rely on maths calculations. They think about this in that sort of, we would, I suppose, call it rather robotic way, command-led. So you're now starting to get to understand how their military organisation works, how their command levels work, the type of people they're selecting. So when you think about war games, you're starting to intimate everything that Stephen said about, I'm in charge, it's my war game. I've got to do this right. There's someone more senior than me. It's hierarchical, dictatorial, authoritarian. You know, if you're great at this, you'll go far. If you're not, you won't. It's a regular part of regular or treated in that military command body. So they will bring people together. It is, you can either test formed units, or they will create and bring people together to test this at that level. Like I say, it can be scaled up from strategic, operational, strategic. An operational, not really a tactical level activity, because everything feeds down into that hierarchical thing. You know, we try to do tactical level wargaming in the MOD, in the military. That's great. But for the Russians, it's such a big system, it's such a constrained system of the way they think about operations and war, that actually everything just filters down. It's a, you know, it's more of a logical, rational, well, if you do at this level, everything follows. So I don't need to keep constantly testing things at that tactical level. It's bilateral as a rule, so it's adversarial. It is that, sort of closed games. It's me against you, you against me. That's what it's about. You know, the Russian military looks at systems. It's my system against your system. You look at information war, you know, disinformation, disinformatia, all that sort of stuff. Information confrontation. It's about my information system against your information system. Systems are important to them. Systems, calculations, combat potential. You know, the correlation and of forces and arms. Again, it's big system stuff, fighting stuff. It's not all this dynamic little tactical whizzly stuff that we tend to do in the West. Determined by the leadership, under the supervision of the immediate civilian senior commander. Again, I've made that point about authoritarian control, command down. So when you look at military lexica over the centuries, and this is part of, you know, I've done this for my ongoing PhD in Maskadovka at the moment. It's the same thing. You know, I've looked at Russian military dictionaries going back into the 1700s to say, look, does this term even appear in their military dictionaries, formal military dictionaries? If it doesn't, that kind of starts to give you an idea that they're not really taking this concept important. You know, if you're going to have a military language, and that language is there to educate and train your officer corps into what it is about the nature of warfare and military studies, if you're not putting certain terms in your military dictionaries, how important is that term to you in performance? And as you'll see from the data there, and you can pore over that in slow time, you'll see that it's in and out. Okay, it's not really kind of there. I've sort of broken up in columns for war game, command staff, and exploratory, but really we're looking at the war game command staff columns. And as you can see there, it kind of dips in a couple of times in the early 1900s. It dips out again, and then really it's from the Cold War and that strategic political messaging to the West that we will see certain terms like they're in there now. Because again, as Stephen said, this is messaging to the West. You know, this is now a term that we want you to recognise in the West, and this is something we do, so you better be careful. And again, you can see that with these sort of rather niche areas that I tend to look at in sort of Russian military activity. So really the lesson from there is they haven't always done it. You know, one of the big myths about the Russian military stuff that I hear all the time, doesn't matter what the thing is, they've always done it. They're really good at it. It's part of their doctrine. And my answer will be, I don't think it's any different to a lot of other militaries around the world. These things ebb in and out of fashion. It depends who writes it and who gets told to write it. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. Sometimes they put a lot of time and effort into it. With the next cohort and the next epoch in history, different people just go, I don't really rate that stuff, I'm not going to do it. So, you know, it's convoluted and interesting. Context for some articles, so relatively few articles on the topic. Like I said, some citations at the back. This is rather niche, even though I've said, here you go, this is what they do as part of their command staff sort of training. And even when you look at their publications now, today, this month, you know, last month, this quarter, there are articles where the words are in the text, not in the title, and saying, I'm going to write an article in the Bulletin of the Academy of Military Sciences all about wargaming. But you can find articles where wargaming, command staff wargaming are mentioned. And I looked at some of those, and it's about how they're training their youth at the moment. So they're saying cadets, but clearly, you know, I've got a 13-year-old son, and there's absolutely no way these are cadets that we would understand it. These are primary school age children in uniform in Russian schools being taught how to do wargaming. So you've got to think, A, they're being taught how to do maths and a high level of maths compared to what we're doing at the moment. And they're teaching their youth to wear uniforms and undertake little command staff war games at school. Okay, that should be something sitting in your head going, that's interesting, okay. So again, try to make it part of the system. But weirdly, it is a rather niche area, looking for the deep academics who are just studying the stuff and publishing the stuff. But like I say, you'll probably find a few articles a year, but no more than that, really. The context, where it has been mentioned in this area, I've just put a non-exhaustive list there. So the strategic missile forces, the medical services, the coordination of military cooperation, the CIS type stuff, the Russian-Belarusian regional group of troops, training of command positions, which you'd highly expect, computer simulations from the Second Chechen War, upskilling officers in different forces, and in quite a lot of the press releases as well. Again, when you look at TASS, and Red Star, and their other sort of newspapery type stuff where they're messaging, again, it's those sound bites and those very short articles that they're saying, yeah, we're doing all this stuff, this is good, it's important, you know, we've got a history in here. As an officer, a training tool. Consider the professional military education of Russian officers. There are 41 military universities across Russia, and very kindly, they even do a brilliant heat map of showing where they all are in their numbers. And I'm trying to slowly get some funding, to internal funding, to write this up a bit more, because it is absolutely fascinating about how the military, Russian military system do professional military education. On top of those 41 universities, and they are military specific universities, don't forget they actually have a much different relationship with their academic civilian relationship universities than we do in the West, particularly in the UK. You know, if you're from a defence background and you want to do work with certain universities, maybe some universities more than others, different institutes, different centres. I've certainly worked with university and academics in the past where you go, keep this on the down low. It's great that you're bringing in money for the university, thank you, but I really don't want my overall students to know I'm doing defence and security related stuff. Russians, completely different system. It's symbiotic. People come and go. They understand that this is the big picture. This is Mother Russia or Father Russia, depending which way you want to look at it, having a collective whole of society approach to defence and security against the West. Right? Different relationship. But there's also 140 military training centres in different universities. So each of those 140 universities in Russia, 140, have a military training centre, which is, I suppose, you know, almost like our officer training centres in some of our universities. But this will be, you know, on steroids type stuff. So you can see how the intellectual academic side of Russian thought is symbiotic with the military thought as well. So in summary, the terminology for war game appears intermittently throughout the lexicon of the Russian military since the 19th century. Skews our perception as well of Russia. Again, I think they write very smartly about their history, sometimes revisionist, sometimes very accurately. It's very difficult, unless you're an expert, to say, well, are they just propagandizing or is that actually true? You know, you've got to spend a lot of time and effort coming up to a value judgment. But actually, because they do that and they look back and they talk about this stuff, it actually impacts our perception of what we think that they're doing. And again, going back to Al's point at the beginning, is actually how are they thinking about us? And if we get a question on that, or if Al prompts me, I'll bring that into the Q&A session afterwards. There are numerous terms that could be used, but I would say just stick looking at war game and command staff war game. If that's what you're interested in wargaming from a Russian point of view. Don't get confused with the other terms. Like, say, you can think you're onto something and then suddenly find why they're all wearing sports kits and running around a track. That's not my idea of a war game. But again, if you know anybody that understands this domain, has those language skills, understands the Russian whatever part of culture you're looking at, bring them on board. Interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary team effort to improve your understanding and knowledge. And then the final bit is about many contexts for application. But remember, most of this is for officers at the operational level, for command in the Russian military system. And you've got to understand what that system looks like to then go, aha, I get it now. I understand why that is the way it is in that system. At the back of the presentation, there's this whole list of in date order publications. You'll see there it goes from 1831. There's probably some other ones. I think Toby's in the audience somewhere, but he specialises much more in sort of Navy, Russian naval stuff, and he's got some really good citations he sent me about the history of Russian Navy doing some sort of war game type activity. There's some contemporary articles with the abstracts, because the Russians very kindly in some of their publications provide both Russian and English language abstracts and keywords. Makes my life a little bit easier. And then I mentioned those Russian military thought series, and then I'll just put some of the ones there that have mentioned wargaming and wargaming in it, so you can understand the range of stuff. Again, you can find all of these on Google. All right? They're really invaluable to find if you can do that. So thanks very much for your time, and I'll get back to our Q&A session.